planned for her, a blatant public relations exercise. Even now, Juliet shuddered at the thought. She watched the thin man in the white coat with his sparse, mousy hair and delicate spectacles as he set up the recording machine once more. At a glance, he was unprepossessing. But there was a pink and white, scrubbed-up kindliness to him that made her well-disposed toward him. If not toward the ginger way he sought to lead her through the worst months of her life. "Let's go even farther back," he suggested, "to the time before you left for France. What stands out to you? What do you remember?" Well, now, she could string this part out for days, if need be. How long might she prevaricate before they'd come to the part of her story she would never tell? They weren't to know it, but her interests and theirs were not aligned. So, time to be more forthcoming. But there is greater danger in lies than in silence, as any operative knew. Juliet rather doubted she was clever enough to carry out her plan. She needed to select appropriately attractive details, arrange and present them like cut flowers in a vase, leave a few thorns on for verisimilitude. But the way the gaze of that special forces officer drilled through her made her insides tumble. She wanted very much to smoke, but didn't dare highlight how badly her hands were shaking. Anyone in her situation would be distressed, she told herself, but something about the SAS man made her want to appear unruffled. He was different, she realized. He treated her as an equal, a fellow combatant, not a delicate flower. Ordinarily, she would appreciate that. Now it only made her deception more difficult. The doctor repeated his question to her. "What happened before France?" "All right," she said slowly. "Yes, of course. I'll tell you about my training, shall I?"
"We're all ears."
Harsh-tongued and sarcastic, Captain McIntyre leaned back in his chair and folded his arms. She met the burly Scot's eyes with a long, cool look. He wasn't a man to be distracted by frills and fancy work. He'd be satisfied with nothing less than the unembroidered truth. If she gave him what he wanted, would he overlook the glaring omissions in her story? He wasn't here to condemn her, after all. Juliet drew a long, steady breath and began. Bewley, New Forest, England, 1943. The night we broke into the Special Operations Executive personnel files was planned with more precision and forethought than many military campaigns. Light-fingered Lucy had made some excuse to visit the Commandant's office the day before. While flirting with one of the clerks, she lifted the appropriate key and made a plasticine impression of it, replacing the key with the smitten clerk none the wiser. I had duplicated the key in the workshop and would act as lookout while she broke into the files. Of the two of us, I had the more innocent face. Lucy was a puzzle, as poised and polished as a London socialite, foul-mouthed as a sailor, and accomplished in criminal sleight of hand as a Dickensian street urchin. I'd heard that some of the top brass were due to arrive the next week to look us over, and our instructors had been writing reports in anticipation. Lucy, always the renegade of our cohort, was justifiably concerned about what might be said of her. She was desperate to get to France, she told me. Well, I thought, weren't we all? My younger brother, Jonathan, had been shot down over the Channel during the Battle of Britain, and I burned to avenge him. The memory of him was the one thing that had got me through the grueling, punishing outdoors training in the Scottish Highlands that had preceded our stint at the Bewley Finishing School. Lucy proposed that we break into the office and read our personnel files. It wasn't as if we hadn't done it before. One of our training exercises had been to sneak into the main administration house, Bewley Manor, and steal papers from one of the other ground floor rooms. We already knew how to approach the manor in the dead of night without being heard or seen, avoiding the many booby traps set up by the resident gamekeeper and woodsman, William Clark. This break-in would merely require the added finesse of being undetectable afterward. No breaking of window panes or jemmying of doors allowed. I was accustomed to being overlooked by my peers when it came to such